Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Yeah, buddy, here we go. It's hour five of the G-Bag Nation, fifth and final hour of the show. Fan After Dark's coming up at 7 o'clock with Fred and Blake and the guys. Looking forward to learning more about that coming up at about 6:45. Right now, Zach Wolchuk has a chuck wagon.
All right, let's do it. All aboard Saw Lanzuerlein talking about Travis Hunt. Report is Lanzuerlein, he's going to do a write-up, both Hunter as a wide receiver and a corner. But there is a current 3-1 count of NFL teams that he has surveyed who do have Hunter graded as a full-time corner who can then take some snaps at wide receiver. I think you do have to do a separate evaluation. Like, you got to watch him as both. I think he's capable of doing both at a very, very high level at the next level. But that does make sense to me. That's kind of how I felt a bit about it, solely just because we just haven't seen the opposite. We haven't seen a wide receiver full-time then go check in and play corner other than like Troy Brown with the Patriots under Bill Belichick, and that was like emergency-type deal. They were so hurt in their secondary. So
I have him do, Wolchuk, is return kicks and punts full-time.
Hey, you know me. I do love me. Give that guy the ball in his hands. He might stink at doing that. He didn't do that a whole lot at Colorado, but I do want him with the ball in his hands as much as possible. So
no, I love the idea of starting him at corner, but like if he's going to be an elite wide receiver – and he's at practice and we're like, dude, preseason game, we tried him in a couple of series and wow, he's amazing at wide receiver as well. I think you got to be open-minded no matter which way you play this once you get him in the building.
Yeah, if you draft him, I think you're drafting him with the intent of playing him both ways. He's too damn talented not to, and I understand the NFL is a different beast, but I think the guy's very, very capable. He's the one non-quarterback that I think is capable of really turning around a franchise.
If he's going to be
special.
You've watched him. If he's going to be bad at one, which one's he going to be bad at? I mean, not me bad like a bad man. I mean, just which average. Which one is he going to look just not like what you thought he could be? Which position would that be?
I guess corner, but I don't see him being bad at either.
I've seen him get beat at corner more than I've seen him make bad plays at wide receiver.
Yeah, I don't think there were a lot of great corners that he went up against.
I've seen McMillan and the kid at Stanford wear him out in a game.
Sure.
And I think if he's going to be not good at one of these positions, corner to me is the position, because I've seen him be spectacular at wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, he's made some plays though at corner also that I haven't seen other guys be able to make. So that's why, like, I think either way he's going to be successful.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. Like, we did see Tet McMillan beating him.
Oh, no. And like I say, watch the Stanford game from last year. Oh, yeah. Playing corner.
On the Alamanor, whatever his name is. Yeah, he did. He got him inside on a route. Maybe some of that's fatigue. Like, he's playing on both sides of the ball, right? So he's playing every single snap virtually. It's insane. But I do see why teams are thinking corner to wide receiver, and that way you're able to get him in the game on both. And I know, like, hey, 817, you're wrong. He won't do both. That team shouldn't draft him. If they're not going to utilize him and get every ounce of production from him, I don't know why a team would draft him in the top five.
He's got a flair for the big play.
Yeah, I think you're wasting some talent.
By the way, you know, speaking of Travis Hunter and Colorado, we talked about the latest with the Deion situation back there in the expressway at 520 if you want to go back and listen to that. But just seeing the reaction on social media and on the text, the Franklin injury attorney text line, it's astonishing how much hate and doubt there is right now for primetime.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. And, hey, the
why facts, do you think that is, Dawson?
A lot of people don't like him, right?
What do you think? I mean, do you have a theory on this one?
Well, I mean, he's pretty, I mean, the confidence is at an all-time high. That can be off-putting to people.
Sure.
And I think that's probably one of the main reasons.
Big personality, you know. I think, you know, maybe that's part of it. You know, maybe how the narrative went around how he had the high school. You know, but you go to Jackson State in Colorado, it's been a half decade since you've started your collegiate coaching career now. Yeah. I think, you know, if you would have been skeptical, like if he'd been in a Jason Witten situation, like going high school directly to the NFL, I'd been like, what the hell are we doing?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if I'm sold either way on how good he's going to be as a head coach or not. But I'm just for me, I'm attacking this topic as, is it realistic that Jerry Jones would do this?
Yeah. And I think it is absolutely realistic.
Yeah, like people, I'm not saying it's the greatest thing in the world that Jerry would hire Deion first for business reasons and also maybe he's a great head coach. I'm not saying I would run a team like that. I'm just wondering if Jerry Jones would actually do this.
That's where I think a lot of Tolos, and just seeing from some of the exchanges I've had, they get ticked off. Like, why aren't we pounding the table for Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn and other hot candidates this cycle?
We did.
We have. We host a five-hour show every day. Hmm. And not everybody's able to listen to the full 5 hours. So if you tune in and you hear a 10-minute portion to where, like, yeah, we're talking about Deion Sanders because that's the story of the day. And that's what you do on a sports radio show is you talk about the headline. That's the headline. And it's also less of what we do. What are they going to do in Frisco? Mm-hmm. I sure as hell wouldn't have Kellen Moore anywhere near my football team as a head coach. I wouldn't interview the guy. Why? Yeah. What's he done to deserve an interview as head coach? But they will. And that's why we're talking about it. What would they do? It's not what any of us would do. Mm-hmm. But they very rarely ever do what any of us would do. They don't give a damn about what we've said. Brian, you've said that many times. Yeah. So I wish Jerry cared about what we had to
say. Carter clipped a 3-minute thing of me breaking down why I would like to have Aaron Glenn here.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Ed Werder reported that Deion would take the job. Jerry is enamored by the idea, mm-hmm. and that Deion approached Colorado and wanted to know if there was any more money, and he did not get an encouraging report. Yeah. You know, so maybe things are trending in that direction.
Quinn Ewers, crazy story today, turned down $8 million on an NIL transfer. The rumors are it was either Oregon, North Carolina, maybe Alabama, one of these teams for coming in here.
I asked North Carolina, and they said no.
They said it wasn't them.
Yeah.
But either way, Quinn always was eyeing the draft, apparently. But, man, we had heard $6 million, got up to an $8 million NIL offer. That's definitely more than what he's going to be able to make. Second-round picks are projected to sign four-year deals ranging from $10.7 million at the top of the round to $6.8 million at the end. And I don't know, maybe he gets to go in the second round in a bad quarterback draft because everybody needs a quarterback for the most part.
Go to the top of the second maybe, huh?
But, yeah, that would probably be rich. Like, if it were a good – if he was in last year's class, I don't think he goes before the fourth round. But maybe. Maybe the Giants, like a team at the top, maybe the Raiders, like if they miss out on a guy, they look at him and they say, hey, there's enough to work with that we're going to go ahead and gamble here at the top of the second round.
Sure.
It could happen. But either way, my gosh, leaving the $8 million, it's still more money than he'd get even as a second-round pick next year.
That is crazy to me. I mean, he must be getting some word that maybe his draft stock is a little bit better than we're all imagining that it is, because that feels crazy to me.
Yeah, I asked Lombardi. I said, hey, did you guys offer this guy $8 million? He said, no, we did not. He goes, we're out here trying to recruit. He goes, yeah, we're losing guys. Hey, they lost a kid yesterday, I think, had 6.5 sacks to the transfer portal. So it's rough in the world out there for various teams.
Yeah. And in the prime prep, the way that went down, like people are texting that in, why they don't like Deion. Yeah, I've heard a lot about that stuff as well. I've actually never met him. I can't give you like, hey, the dude's a bad guy or a good guy. Some people have, and they don't like him for that reason.
Like 214, Deion's fake and all about Deion. Most great leaders, most wartime generals are incredible egomaniacs, you know, that have a lot of dimensions to their personality. I'll go ahead and say it. I think America does not like a proud, outspoken black man. They like you to be humble and quiet and as like close to the white ideal as possible to get full acceptance.
Could very well be true.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to another proud black man. Let's go to LeBron James here. So LeBron was on with the Kelce Brothers, New Heights podcast. You guys remember after Christmas Day, Lakers game, LeBron goes to the mics like, we still own Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't age really well once we saw the ratings. So the two football guys, Jason and Travis, they got to bust his balls a little bit about that. And here's how that exchange went.
Who owns Christmas? According to you, I love the NFL, but Christmas is the NBA's. We are sneaking in on that territory now.
I saw the numbers after the fact. You guys kicked our ass, all right? Okay. From a viewership standpoint, y'all kicked our ass. The games weren't as great as they should have been.
I thought it was a pretty good game.
Well, you have Beyonce come out there. Pat Mahomes and Travis, you guys go there and kick Pittsburgh. You know, when you go out there, you got your little brother and he may get beat up one time. You're like, hey, we didn't lose that fight. We're here.
Yeah, we
didn't lose. That's how I felt. I had to stand up. I had to stand up for the NBA.
And I respect the hell out of that. You know, you got to. You got to hold it down for your sport. But my gosh, if anybody is going up against the NFL, you're going to lose that battle. And hey, LeBron admitted the NFL. No matter, hey, if it's Christmas Day, if it's New Year's Day, whatever day they want to put games on, they're going to own said holiday.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any game, like the worst NFL game versus the most high-profile Steph Curry in his prime matchup against LeBron with the Cavaliers. I would love to see those numbers.
Yeah, like Chiefs-Steelers that day was a blowout. Chiefs dominated, maybe played their most complete game of the season, yet the number's still awesome. Okay, we got to get to Lou Holtz and Ryan Day. Oh, baby, we got Ohio State, we got Notre Dame, we got the national championship game just around the corner. So we start off with a trip down memory lane. This is last year. You had Ohio State and Notre Dame do a little home and home, and Lou Holtz took to social media and, well, he was kind of taking some jabs there at Ryan Day. He said he's lost to Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, Michigan twice, and everybody beats him. Does so because they're more physical than Ohio State. And I know Notre Dame will take that same approach. I think Notre Dame will take that same approach, said Lou Holtz. Well, what happened? It was 17-14, and the Buckeyes went on to win. And during the postgame interview on NBC, Ryan Day had words for Lou Holtz.
Like, I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now. What he said about our team, I cannot believe. This is a tough team right here. We're proud to be from Ohio, and it's always been Ohio against the world, and it'll continue to be Ohio against the world. But I'll tell you what, I love those kids, and we got a tough team.
We got a tough team, guys. It's tough. We're going to see how tough you are against the Irish in the national championship game. So now we get Lou Holtz. He's posting a 5-minute video. Most of it, you've got to really listen hard to understand what's going on. And Lucius is very, very right. There was a lot of drool, slobber. Look, the guy's not on TV anymore for a reason, but he's a legendary coach. And here it is, his prediction for the national championship game.
So you remember me telling you this? Notre Dame wins this football game by 3, but it's going to be a great game. I'm convinced of that. Good luck to you. Thanks for watching me over all these weeks. I've been right so far. I hope I'm right this time. But people think I'm anti-Ohio State. Nothing could be further from the truth. I was raised in the state of Ohio. I went to college at Kent State in Ohio. Our motto, we can't read, we can't write, but we are Kent State. I coached Ohio State under Woody Hayes. We won the national championship. There's no coach that's had a greater influence on my philosophy and my belief as a coach than Woody Hayes. So I love Ohio State. It's just that they have a statue of me at Notre Dame. Notre Dame is a very special place. As I would say to our team all the time, remember, man, we're Notre Dame and they ain't. Now use the word ain't for emphasis, not to illustrate the caliber of education I received at Kent State University. So thank you for watching me. Let's hope I'm right.
We can't write. We can't read.
God, I was tuning into that.
We are Kent State. That's unbelievable. Yeah.
Is anybody under the age of 80 tuning in for what Lou Holtz has to say about college football?
I didn't know he was posting videos. Apparently, he said he's gotten every college game right so far in the bracket. I did not fact check.
Just for Notre Dame. I think he's just fact checking. I think he's just been picking Notre Dame to win.
Well, he said he got Ohio State and Notre Dame both right. That was his prediction to be in this game.
Nice work, buddy.
So now you have Ryan Day at the presser. And of course, he's been asked about, like, you run into Lou Holtz at all?
Speaking of that, I'm just curious. Have you and Lou Holtz ever talked since then? Have you either patching things up or comments between you?
No.
Okay, thank you.
No. Ryan Day doesn't like him. So here's Holtzy. Goes to social media. If Notre Dame doesn't win, it's because we want to preserve Ryan Day's job.
Oh, no.
I was originally going to be at the game in spirit, but now I'll be dragging my body along as well. Let's go. Come on, Lou. You got this, buddy. Lou's going to be there. And is it the pressure of Lou Holtz on the sideline, dragging that old crusty body down the Fighting Irish sideline, looking dead across the field in the eyes of Ryan Day and the Buckeyes? Is that going to be their demise?
Nice. Went full Keith Jackson on us there.
That was impressive, dude. Seriously.
I tried. That was good.
You really
channeled. Do you think he'll stand next to Lee Corso during the game?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know if either of them can stand for the whole game, Brian.
Yeah,
but maybe.
I'll tell you what. I see Lee Corso down there quite a bit. He's right. Like Freeman was trying to make a call or a check, and Lee
maybe
Corso
Lee's
was,
got it. I know Lou's
right
doing,
behind him.
Lou's sitting for all these videos. I don't know that he's really capable of walking long distances. He might have to have a suite or something, but. This is going to be an epic showdown.
And Ryan Day is going after him like he's a drunk Michigan fan. You know that
Ryan Day is classless. He's a classless individual.
Yeah, I heard everything I needed to hear about that
guy. He's probably the most punchable face coach in college football. And
I think I'd still fire him. Even if they win the championship, I'd be like, great job pulling that out of the fire, but we're done here, sir.
Yeah, go get more beard dye.
Thank you, Chuck. Chuck Wagon most nights here in the G-Bag Nation. When we come back, it's time to talk some hoop. A lot of stuff going on, Chief.
Yes, including is LeBron fooling us all once again?
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next in the nation.
Yeah, buddy. Welcome back. Let's talk some hoops here. Segment's brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one is injured in a car, truck, wreck, call the Frankels. Get a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Hit frankaffirm.com, and let's head on over to Chief Rim Sesh.
Yeah, we got some stuff here, boys. But I just saw Blake Elliott eating what looks to be one of the more delicious local cheesesteaks that I've ever personally laid my eyes on. But how is he consuming that, Broadus?
It's the technique, I think, is really poor. He's attacking it from the side.
Almost like it's a burger. It's horizontal. I thought it was a burger at first.
You would think that you would start with the end and go into, but he attacks it from the side. So like he's basically putting his face into the cheese and the meat part of it as he's eating it. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I thought it was unusual for a Philly cheesesteak to be consumed that way. Dawson, I've watched you eating many of them, and I don't think you attack them that way. I'd call you a professional cheesesteak eater.
I do consider myself one, although I'm not as well versed on the various cheesesteaks that are out there. I'm usually, just a Jersey Mike's kind of guy.
Yeah.
I feel like the consistency.
I brought this one from the Philly one. That was good. Yeah.
Yeah. I do feel like the consistency of the cheesesteak leaves a lot to be desired. So I don't do a lot of sampling of others.
I got to get you one of those chopped cheese.
Sean made a homemade one.
Yeah,
and it looked pretty good.
Chopped cheese is really good.
I think the chopped cheese better than Philly cheesesteak.
Yeah,
better. I need to try the chopped cheese.
Chopped cheese is good.
Yeah.
I think we need to do a Texas cheesesteak with brisket layered in there.
Yep.
There you go. We go brisket. And like a white queso. Maybe not all brisket. I mean, that'd be a lot of brisket to put down. Just a thin strip or you mix it in. I don't know, though.
I think you're onto something here. Some chopped brisket, peppers, onions, and some queso blanco smothered on top.
And the steak, though, right? You're talking about a double protein situation?
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Love it. Okay, and before we crank up...
You went...
you have some brisket and ribeye,
went ribeye and brisket together?
Yeah.
I think that's the way you do it.
A little ribeye.
Otherwise, it would just be a brisket sandwich, you know, but we're going to turn it into the Texas cheesesteak by layering in some smoked brisket.
I like what you're playing with the queso, the pico de gallo instead of peppers and onions.
Ooh, you could get creative with that if you wanted to. I do think the grilled factor of it, though, adds something nice to the, like, the cheese
with the steak. Peppers and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's something that's not broke.
Dawson, you take the peppers out, right?
I might layer in some cilantro or something.
So you're basically bread, cheese, and meat, right?
Yep, doing it right.
Okay,
before I do want to play the sound from yesterday because Dawson had to boogie on out and didn't get to relive the
moment.
Oh, you
want to replay the sound from yesterday?
Yeah.
This is a stunner.
This does not incriminate you, Wolchuk.
This is becoming a staple.
At all.
No, actually, I think it was hilarious.
It's hilarious.
I'm happy you're bringing it back.
Yeah, this is wonderful.
This is a high note for me.
It is,
You didn't say that at the break.
This is no indictment on you, Wolchuk, whatsoever.
I smoked since then.
I just wanted Dawson to be able to relive what he was having to handle in real time with Crosstalk from two nights ago.
Fred
making a very interesting argument, one hell of a take about the stalker dude who was stalking Caitlin Clark, saying it was, you know, kind of good for the WNBA. This just shows how on the map they are. And then Wolchuk sneaks in to add to the hilarity.
Well, that's how you know WNBA is making it. I mean, if we're being honest. I mean, I know that's not what you want to hear, but
I would think like TV ratings or fan interest would be a better sign.
But I'm just saying, like, now we didn't hear how many people were getting stalked before this. I mean, this is
you're relating to other story. I thought you were at Liz. We're talking about Liz.
I'm talking about the stalker,
and that's why you're a fat.
This is
fatty. The fats.
So he started laughing right on the hard A, right? Fred starts laughing. I didn't, you know, realize how that word was going to end.
It was a lot to handle in real time. Yeah, yeah. Totally understood.
Hey,
there.
You did a great job. I think everybody won here in this scenario.
Yeah, it was some
classic live radio moment.
Yep. All right, let's go ahead and cut the lights out. We'll put the kids to bed. The G-Bag Nation's going all 56 inches around that rim.
Oh boy,
rain dance.
It's always a special occasion whenever I can set Wolchuk up for failure. Do we have that Derek Lively update?
He's out tomorrow.
Out, yeah.
Yeah, he's out tomorrow. Was I going to fail? Was I supposed to not know?
Not setting you up for failure then.
I
wasn't sure if we had a Lively update at this point.
No, we do. Kyrie is questionable. Lively's been ruled out.
All right. Last night was tough. We're gonna try and gloss over it. NBA bleeped us. We know it. They know it. And this is a bit
for the Pelicans.
A snake-bitten season to some extent with the injuries. Yeah. The NBA's actively playing defense against your wins late in the game. It's tough.
It's rock bottom right there, hopefully.
It hurts.
It can't get worse than this.
But last night, we had...
Yeah, I think you're right.
We had. Did you guys see the Ja Morant posterization?
Yeah. It was after a whistle.
It was. They're calling it the greatest dunk that never counted.
Oh.
Wimby challenged that thing, and Ja went... right to him.
This is the sound
beautiful
from the telecast where it's Grizzlies, it's Spurs. Ja Morant gets fouled but continues the play with a hammer dunk, and it's Wemby who tries to challenge it.
Yeah.
And this is how it sounded.
For the Grizzlies, a lot of late game situations. Ja in the late game situation.
Oh! That won't count.
That won't count.
Yeah, but it was one heck of a moment. There
was
a classic.
He challenged
Ja
him. He
dunk.
Did. He challenged him. Good.
Yeah, Wemby, that's a, I mean.
He played through the whistle.
Played past it.
Yeah.
You hear the whistle.
The echo.
He so played. Unfortunate we got that whistle. Yeah. You know, you just don't know how that changed Wembanyama's effort.
Totally. Like he went vertical.
I mean,
but did he do it with the same enthusiasm that he would if there was no whistle? I don't know. We'll never know. But that's why sort of a rookie move there from Wemby.
Yeah.
Once you hear that whistle, man, that's a stay away. Especially when you got Ja Morant screaming down the lane like that.
He rocked that thing back.
Oh,
yeah.
In the 80s, nasty. You wrap him up.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. You tackle him. You de-cleat him. Put a shoulder, forearm shiver.
When something. I saw that on social last night, I didn't realize the whistle had blown. So I'm sitting there watching it and considering, is this the greatest moment in dunk history?
Yeah. 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 It was fair to ask that question.
A real ticky-tack kind of foul, too.
Yeah.
Just unnecessary.
Yeah, it was epic. Again, they're calling it the greatest dunk that never counted, but Ja Morant still got the bunnies, and we know that he's lent voice to the fact that he doesn't really want to be doing that anymore.
He doesn't want to do that anymore.
It's tough on the body,
yep.
But he found his moment, and my goodness, it was special.
Might be the greatest poster, but do you have to actually touch the rim in order for it to be a dunk, I think would be a clarifying question.
I think Blake Griffin changed the game on that. Because he was doing some
throw-ins.
Kind of some throw-ins.
Yeah.
And it is a fair critique.
I mean, I guess as long as you get above the rim and throw it down, yeah. We're good.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with the size discrepancy there.
Yeah.
And
so
just
badass that you count.
Him soaring through the sky like that. That was awesome last night. Unless, of course, you're Wemby. Now, Steph had
a great
moment last night. 31 points, 8 assists, 7 threes made. Versus the Timberwolves, and the T-Wolves crowd, their fan base, they just can't shut their mouths in another place. We remember what Luka did to them last year, and he went full on just assassin on the entire city, and they were chirping at him. He shut them up. Last night, you have some folks in the corner three spot for the T-Wolves fans just chirping at Steph. And he took it personal, and he let it out on him. And one of the big threes he had right there in the corner in front of their face, it was a big late three. And as soon as he lets the ball go, he just starts staring right at those three individuals that were giving him some business. And it was a pretty cool moment there. Steph getting it done once again. And the T-Wolves fans are just, they're funny, man. They're funny. Like, come on. Don't be poking the bear that is Luka or Steph. You know better than that. You should.
That's at least a top five Steph Curry look away. You know, it's one thing if you're out top and you start jogging back down the court, but you're right there in the belly of the beast. You hit it with everybody surrounding you, and you're close enough to turn around and look at them and then just catch a glimpse of it going through the net. That was vintage Steph Curry. And, you know, the fact they came back and win that game was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Oh, it was a great comeback. And I think it was fueled with Steph being like, I'm not going to leave this building without shutting these guys up personally. Okay, let's hear some sound of LeBron. Obviously, he was on the New Heights podcast with the Kelce Bros. Played a little clip earlier in the wagon, hell of a wagon, by Woolchuck today.
Hmm.
And now we have the sound of him explaining the iconic, infamous pickup game that he played with Michael Jordan and some other NBA pros when he was just 16 years old. And we'll let LeBron tell you how it went and... You decide for yourselves if you believe it.
So when I finally was able to get on the court, first of all, MJ, Antoine Walker, and the rest of those guys did not let young guys get on the court at all. And I was 16 years old. I was sophomore in high school. And it takes a while to get on the court. It's usually when the older guys, they get tired and they don't want to play no more. They like whatever. But I did. And I was able to get on the court alongside. I was on the court with Michael Jordan, Antoine Walker, Penny Hardaway,
Ron Artest,
Michael Finley, all these guys.
Who guarded you?
Nobody. I was unguardable. Listen, I was 16.
This
I was
in high school sophomore. Baby.
Was
16 the baby fro?
Yep, that was the baby fro. Yeah. I was in Chicago at MJ's court. It was called Hoops. There's a clip out right now of actually Metta World Peace talking about that moment as well. Like,
I got to check it out.
When I finally got out there, I was like, I'm busting ass, man.
It's
I was
time
nervous.
To show up.
I was nervous as hell, being out there with MJ and the rest of those guys. But
are you kidding me?
I was like, oh, I'm about to go crazy. And I did. I did, man.
That's awesome, man.
I did.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. If it's true, that is pretty awesome. I have heard Ron Artest talk glowingly about LeBron from that particular day. Now, I don't know how much of that was actually on Michael Jordan, per se.
It's probably Antoine Walker.
Unguardable.
Yeah, Antoine Walker giving him the business. That is actually extremely believable.
I mean, but there's stories like this. I don't know, you know, if they're just taking the one out of the 20 times that a 16-year-old like Dirk or now it's Cooper Flagg, the 16-year-old Cooper Flagg stories. You know, he just turned 18 the other night. By the way, he's been balling for Duke since he turned 18.
Total baller.
You know, so I don't know. Was that the first time you were in that situation? How tired were the other guys? But there's no doubt, like at 16 years old, to be able to hold your own against anybody, that's a sign of probable greatness to come.
Yeah, it's just like knowing what we know about Michael Jordan, it's hard to imagine him allowing that to happen. You know, like if one of these youngsters, especially the guy that everybody's calling the chosen one and sort of the next you or whatever.
Yeah.
You feel like he would be taking that extremely personally.
Well, I mean, how old is Jordan in that situation? Isn't Jordan like 42? You know, he's done with the Wizards at this point.
Oh, yeah, when Bron was 16.
That's a fair question.
I mean, Jordan was capable of still getting a bucket for Washington, but he was pretty heavy. And it was a lot of mid-range jumpers and layups and just barely getting over the rim type of dunks.
Yeah, so this would have been, what, like 24?
It was LeBron 40, right? 20,
yeah, so 24 years ago.
Yeah.
So Michael Jordan would have been...
He's older than me, right? Michael's 60 what?
He's 61.
Yeah, same age as me then. Okay.
So he's 21 years older than LeBron, 1963 to 1984. So you're 37 years old as Jordan.
Still playing, right?
Yeah. Might have been his Washington comeback tour.
The Wizards.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but that's a hell of a legend there from LeBron James. And you're sort of like naive to all the pressure and all that stuff because like you can think, well, think about the way LeBron sort of choked away the finals versus the Mavericks, you know, but I just think that was a different time in terms of pressure. You're just kind of a young 16-year-old cocksure kid ready to just go tear it up. You know, you have no idea what's really happening there. The pressure doesn't really amount until later on in the career.
Okay, I got the timeline. This is right in the middle of his Bulls and Wizards. So who knows what kind of shape Jordan was in. He might have been, that's not even baseball Jordan, who was still really thin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this might be out of shape. I'm never coming back. I'm just playing for fun with the guys in the offseason type of deal.
Tim McMahon is saying that the Houston Rockets have let it be known that they are fans of Devin Booker. So do with that what you will. Obviously,
who's that now?
The Houston Rockets.
They're playing well.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
Playing well, young, good, well-coached, feisty team, well-coached. Defense is incredible, but man, that would be a giant mistake.
Yeah, going for that. I think so. I mean, maybe Booker and Wemby would be great because Wemby is going to be great and Booker can score. But yeah,
if he's going to the Spurs, yeah. I'm talking about the Rockets.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, I think that's a giant mistake. They don't have anybody on the caliber that I think could pair well with Book.
That's not a guy who's bringing the defense to the table that I think, you know, Udoka wants.
And you're probably getting rid of what, Fred VanVleet?
If you're working out a trade or something like that. I don't know, but. The Suns situation is rapidly deteriorating, so it could be only a matter of time before Devin Booker's out of there. And
they might have to fire sale and take whatever they can get.
That's fair. Yeah. And then we'll have to monitor this this Maverick Carter, LeBron James friend and business partner, Maverick Carter.
F1 basketball, huh?
Leading an effort to create an international basketball league.
Oh, that's awesome.
Apparently LeBron's not involved, and I see conflicting reports from like Bloomberg saying that this is – they're trying to rival the NBA, and then like front office sports saying like this is not to try and rival the NBA. This is like what Broadus mentioned, more of like they're calling it an F1 for basketball. So I don't know what this means. I mean
that sounds like you're going to rival the NBA.
Bloomberg saying their investment group is going to try to tap private equity and sovereign wealth funds to try to raise $5 billion. If you're trying to get $5 billion, you are trying to rival it.
Like F1 is the top of Formula One racing. So yeah, I mean. Maybe LeBron's trying to stay away from this until he's done playing, because that is kind of, the NBA probably would not like that.
No, I can't imagine.
As a player, like, hey, you're one of our employees. I don't need you doing this right now.
Just something to monitor.
Maybe you can do it better. All right. It is the G-Back Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. There's a proper rim session here for you on a Thursday night. We'll cross with The Fan after dark, see what Fred and Blake have cooking for you next on The Fan. Oh, thank you, Lucius. G-Back Nation, 105.3 The Fan. Brian Broadison is LSU Fleece. Looks like LSU might become the new Georgia. Not the way you're hoping for, Brian.
Yeah, we're having trouble driving down there, aren't we?
Freshman quarterback Colin Hurley found unresponsive but breathing by LSU police and the Baton Rouge Fire Department just before 3 a.m. this morning following a car crash near the gates of the LSU campus.
Yeah.
According to a crash report.
I know where
report.
He was coming in.
I mean, dude dies or dude kills somebody last week and you're back out there getting after it, drinking and driving? That's crazy, man.
I think I saw the report that there was no alcohol in his system. He was found unresponsive, but there was no alcohol found on him, per the state police
report.
Just
dinger pills.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what, but there was no alcohol found.
You think he just passed out?
I mean, there's a lot of reasons you can pass out behind the wheel. Obviously, alcohol being the leading case, but it's not all in one size shoe.
Could be Xanax.
Could be a lot of anxiety. I don't know.
You just pass out from anxiety?
I don't know. I don't.
Couple
I don't,
perks.
I don't.
I had a buddy that was consistently falling asleep at the wheel.
I don't have narcolepsy. Any problem.
It was nothing induced.
Yeah,
it was just.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know that it was necessarily narcolepsy. It was just like he would get tired and freaking pass out. I don't think he's clinically a narcoleptic human being necessarily.
Ernie Adams was a famous narcoleptic.
Narcoleptic.
Yeah.
They'd so say, was Monty Kiffin.
They would sit there. Oh, Monty fell asleep on my shoulder on the after the Kansas City game. I was typing a story about how well his defense was playing. Next thing I looked over, Monty was like leaning over on my shoulder.
Drooling on you like Lou Holtz might.
I just kept typing. I didn't care.
What's your thoughts on that, Brian? You go on a plane, someone falls asleep on your shoulder. You
it was
push
a bus.
Them off?
Where's the bus ride?
But if it was a plane and it was a rando, how would you feel? Random person.
Oh, no. You kind of wake them up.
It depends on what the rando looks like.
No, I never get that lucky.
Well, that's true.
Ever sat there in a plane seat and go, please go by, please go by, please go by.
Every time.
Amen to that.
we're all like stereotyping in our head.
We can't all be Bill Belichick and strike gold with the
boy, you got that right.
You got to sit in first class to pull that one off.
Seriously. That's the truth.
What would be your approach to the Mavs ending last night if you're working over there at the basketball club? Are you thinking we got to petition the league, we have to protest this, or do you just say, man, officiating's bad, let's move on?
Officiating is bad, let's move on, and I would love to do the woe is me situation, but the Dallas Mavericks are a better team than they showed last night, and if it takes a controversial call by the refs to help you beat the Pelicans, then your team's not that good. I do think they are that good, but I don't think you need a petition. This is not, that bucket is not the reason you lost the game. Now, it was goaltending. The last two-minute report has already come out saying it was goaltending, bad officiating, but I don't think Jason Kidd is going to be looking at the team like, well, guys, we're good enough. We just needed that call. Now, you should have beat the Pelicans by 15, 20 points, even without Luka and Kyrie, or at least win the game comfortably. The way that they played in that game was not good, and for it to come down to that shot, I think is the reason that a little bit of rumors are happening that maybe they're going to be active at the trade deadline.
Okay, I want more on that in a second, but there was also the non-call on Daniel Gafford with 1:06 to go that led to the Klay Thompson, traveling. I guess my only take would be, guys, do we really need replay if all this stuff that's determining the game is not getting challenged?
Yeah, I love that. I don't understand why, because correct me if I'm wrong, in football, everything in the last 2 minutes, you can't challenge anything, everything's reviewed, especially scoring plays, turnover plays. But in basketball, there's so much gray area. I just feel like there should be a way to stop the game and replay something. They talk about slowing the pace down. That's why they don't want to do it. I don't think any NBA fan at home, whether you're a fan of that team or not, is watching at home going, this really crucial play, if they have to review it 15 times, is making this game less enjoyable. You want to see the right outcome. Now, in the second quarter, do I care about an out-of-bounds call? Probably not. But in the fourth quarter, anything under 5 minutes that can swing the game, I don't think any NBA fan, casual or not, is going to be mad. Are you doing the extra work to replay? So
if you have replay, use it. Use it at the key moments. I think Hagee and Bobby Corella both made great points today here on The Fan that you'll find out 15 minutes later that a dude had his foot on the line.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, that was only a two, or that guy was actually out of bounds before he scored that bucket. So we're taking that away.
Correct.
I do feel like a lot of times fans complaining about officiating is just the emotions of losing and you want to blame somebody. Mm-hmm. But in other times, it calls for a genuine review.
No, it's bad.
Of what the hell we're doing here.
But what are we going to do? Like, what even is the plausible, okay, let's do this and make this better? I don't know. We do the last 2 minute report.
Okay. So I was thinking about that, and I thought you could play it one of two ways. One of them would be to review everything, and I don't want that because the game already stops down way too much, especially when you get into playoff basketball. Yeah. It's so annoying. Just go back to the way it was. where nothing is reviewed. I don't think anything was wrong in basketball. And, you know, I always appreciate the attempt to get something right and make it fair. But the pursuit of it through replay isn't making the game more enjoyable, right? And definitely not more fair for Mavs fans last night. So what do? I think you got to go to computers and cameras and sensors.
Sensors. I'm a big fan of sensors. I've been saying that in a lot
sensor
of
sensor would have known that last night. Balls sensors. On the glass.
Is what it is. No He's gray often area. Said
that. Yeah, there's no human needed. Guys, what's coming up on your show tonight?
Well, we got our girl Lauren Gunn. She's going to talk all things trade deadline. That's kind of her shtick. And plus, she's a big Mav, so we'll talk about that as well.
Thick Thursday.
It is a thick Thursday. I don't know if we'll mention that to her. Ben Troop, friend of the program, he is geeked about this Deion Sanders stuff. He's convinced Deion's going to come here. And he talks to folks in the NFL.
Good.
So we'll be curious to get his thoughts on that and obviously preview a little bit of the weekend football and the national championship on Monday.
We getting specific names on these Mavs talks or just that the phone lines are heating up again?
I'm the Pelicans defensive wing Herb Jones keeps picking up more and more and more traction and being
Did he get super hurt?
He is hurt. I wouldn't say
it was
super
like two
hurt.
Or 3 weeks, I think.
He okay. is hurt, but a lot of people have also said it's a little convenient. You know, he Ooh. Was in New Orleans last night. Nico was talking with the GM of New Orleans. You saw him on the phone the entire game.
Griffin,
if you're watching him.
Yep. David Giffen.
So I think Griffin. David Griffin.
Yeah. Griffin.
That's a labrum tear in your shoulder. Yeah, must be real minor.
Right?
Yeah.
Wait, is David Griffin? Is he the one? He's been around for
Cavs.
A minute,
Cavs.
Hadn't he?
Cavs.
Oh,
Cavs.
Okay. I'm thinking of Chris.
You're thinking of Geffen.
David Geffen. That's the other one.
That's a record producer guy, right?
Yes.
Executive, something like that.
Know,
thanks to Lucius Alexander and the Pimp Cup over there.
Master
Control, your 75 and fits you. Woolchuck and Chia follow and brought us. Fan After Dark's coming up next. Till tomorrow at 2. Danny Cannell at 6 talking Natty. You're going home with the G-Bag Nation, Natties.